Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. John Lurie had a huge impact on the world of art and culture in downtown New York during the 1980s and beyond. As a musician, composer, artist, and actor, John followed his ambitions and relentless imagination to make things happen. And he did it his way, as he explains in his memoir, The History of Bones. John co-founded the legendary band The Lounge Lizards. He acted in such pivotal films as Stranger Than Paradise and Down by Law, which led to The New Yorker calling John the Humphrey Bogart of the 80s. I believe this means that Humphrey Bogart is the John Lurie of the 40s. John's HBO show, Painting with John, proves that he remains a creative force. In his memoir, he admits that he never would have said this out loud to anyone, but his life goal was to find and express God through music.
I don't know how to talk about that kind of thing. One, when you mention God, it's like that means a million different things to a million different people. And this is something I could really only express through music, and to talk about it seems to cheapen it or make it something that it really isn't. So I'm hesitant to go there. You know, if I was Rumi or Lyatsu, I might attempt to do it, but I'm not. So I'm shy to go there. Do you know what I mean? Fair enough, right?
Yeah, oh, I know exactly what you mean. It is, you're right. God means different, so many different things to so many different people. It's a tough one to answer. So yeah.
but you could keep, don't edit that out. But I mean, I don't know how to answer.
Right, fair enough. You and your younger brother, Evan, co-founded the Lounge Lizards in 1979. What was your objective with the Lounge Lizards? What were you trying to achieve?
Oh, it was a time of no objectives. Evan had just moved to New York. I'd been in a band in high school with Steve Piccolo. Ardo Lindsay and I were jamming a bunch with different people, and Ardo luckily brought in Anton Fear, who sort of whipped us into shape in rehearsal where we were all just fooling around. And I was writing music for a movie that I wanted to make called Fatty Walks. But so I had this music that I'd written, and then it just happened by such accident. Jim Farrad asked, which was a good band to play on a Monday night opening for Peter Gordon. And I said, oh, my band, not having a band. And we rehearsed twice and came together on stage.
The legendary rock critic Lester Bangs wrote that the Lounge Lizards were, quote, staking out new territory that lies somewhere west of Charles Mingus and east of Bernard Herrmann.
Isn't that a nice thing? I mean, with all the crappy journalists writing horrible things about us, and Lester was one of the few art critics and music critics that I actually respected, and then to pick two of my complete heroes, that was a nice moment when he did that. That was really nice, because we were being written off as a bunch of phonies, you know, and then Lester stepped in and said that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you couldn't ask for a nicer description. Do you think it was accurate?
No, you can't ask me that. That's like...
Okay.
But yes, I do. But
yeah. In 1986, the Lounge Lizards recorded a live album in Tokyo. And you say that walking back to the hotel, listening to the recording of the song Big Heart, cranked up in your headphones, was one of the happiest moments of your life.
Yes.
Why?
Well, one, you know, I don't often do that walk around listening to music with headphones. But when you do, the place becomes modified. You can walk down the street in wherever. In New York City, you walk down the street listening to Umu Sangara. I had this experience once, and she changed what New York City was. And the song Big Heart did that. So Tokyo is quite, you know, is visually quite fascinating anyways, with you know, especially during a bustling time. And kind of also the kind of ancient and modern stuff mixed together, and some guy unloading fish from a cart, and then the neon lights going off. And but the sound of the song overwhelmed the visual experience, and it sounded good. It was also partly just because it sounded good.
One of our favorite Lounge Lizards compositions is the title track from the Voice of Chunk album, which was released in 1988. Can you tell us a bit about this song?
One, that chuck-a-chuck. I was in that movie, Last Temptation of Christ, and while I was in Morocco making that movie, I spent a lot of time with the Ganawa musicians, and they're mostly like outside of town in this little encampment. And I guess they don't really live anywhere, they're gypsies, but they're really just music that just moved me really deeply. And that, so that beginning thing, that rhythm is based on that. And then it's just that call and response between the two saxophones is a nice thing, but that doesn't sound Ganawa-ish. And then Rebo takes a solo that's phenomenal. Every night, I mean, you know, night after night, he would take these amazing solos on that.
You say that what you might have been best at in your life was doing film scores for movies. Do mm-hmm. you have a favorite film score that you composed that you're most proud of?
I mean, the two I'm kind of most proud of were the Variety score for Betty Gordon and the Mannion Lowe for Lisa Kruger. And those were partly I was proud of those because they were done for $0, you know. And the musicians also kind of, everybody really liked Lisa Kruger, so they all came and played for next to nothing and went and did that music. And it came out really good. And the same with the Betty Gordon thing. It was like I hired musicians off the street and gave them like $75 each for the afternoon. Some really good players. And, you know, you just did them in a day or a day and a half, you know, with no money and no producers leaning over you and ruining it, you know.
You've also done a lot of acting. You appeared in Jim Jarmusch's Stranger Than Paradise and Down by Law, also Wim Wenders' Paris, Texas, and Martin Scorsese's The Last Temptation of Christ. Has acting influenced your music and your art in any way?
No, I don't see that. The acting was kind of a side thing for me.
You were good at it, though, and you got a lot of acclaim for your acting.
I had moments. I mean, I think there's an honesty in me that kind of comes through. But I didn't really have any chops as an actor, you know? I didn't mm-hmm. really have... If I worked on it more, I think I might have been good. But I was much more concentrating on music. I mean, you learn something from everything. Mm-hmm. You know, from the rhythm of things, you learn. But I can't think of a specific way that acting inform the music, really.
Yeah. One of your latest projects is the HBO series Painting with John, written, mm-hmm. directed, and starring you.
It's important to have fun every day. Roll a tire down a hill. Bounce. Roll two tires down a hill. Bounce. Every day, a little bit of fun. That's what I think.
What do you get out of doing the show? And what do you want your viewers to get out of watching you?
We were going to just make these two-minute things to cheer people up a bit. People just seemed so depressed. And we were going to just make these two-minute vignettes of Nezrin, my assistant, and I teasing each other while I painted. Because they were cute. They were funny. And Eric Marcus came down to film it with us, but we were just going to put them on Instagram and on our website and stuff. And Eric was so good at this stuff, and we enjoyed working together, so they just started. So basically what I wanted first was to just cheer people up. That was the original motivation behind it.
Does doing the show, does it cheer you up?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm going in a couple of days, I'm going to Montreal to work with Eric. But right now he's just emailing me stuff. So we did this one thing. This is Anne-Marie James is the woman who, you know, she shops and cooks for me down there. And she had overcooked these potatoes so that they were hard as a rock. And I said, Anne-Marie, these will only be good as a weapon. And then and then for a couple of years, I would tease her about Anne-Marie's weapon potatoes. So then we filmed a scene with her as though she was running a cooking show. But this is how you make weapon potatoes. And she would carve a spearhead out of the potatoes and overcook them. And she would explain overcooking them. And then Eric attached them to these long sticks that we bought from the hardware store. And then we went out and we, Nezrin announces, now we will invade neighboring villages. And then me and Eric wrote this song where we sing Anne-Marie Glud James, her weapon potatoes are the sharpest in the land. So we're singing this very catchy melody without us marching down the street with our weapon potato sticks and silly hats. And so to see that, it's just me, Nezrin, and Anne-Marie, which is really my house, you know, and it just warms your heart beyond belief. And it's hard to tell if other people will be as moved by it as we were, but it certainly moved me.
Oh, that's great, yeah. You've been dealing with Lyme disease and cancer for some time now. How are you feeling these days?
The cancer is done. There's no evidence of cancer left. The side effects from the treatment left me with a bunch of stuff that still sort of lingers. The Lyme disease is just the weirdest, and you just don't know what is being caused by that and what isn't, you know, and it causes all kinds of fluctuations in your blood pressure, your thyroid, your all kinds of metabolic. So you can be going along, you know, and you're fine, and then suddenly you're completely woozy or you've got all this nerve pain or, you know, but it's much, much less than what it was. In fact, I used to 10 years ago, 15 years ago, assume I was going to be sick for the day, and now I assume I'm going to be well, but then I get hit with this wall of problems, you know. So, but I'm okay, I'm functioning. Plus, yeah, if you read the book, I'm 68 years old, and the most frequently asked question was, how the blank is this guy still alive? So I've kind of done a lot of stuff to the body that, you know, I'm lucky to be here at all, so I won't complain.
Yeah, yeah. A while back, you created this alter ego named Marvin Pontiac and recorded an album as Marvin Pontiac. Why did you want to do this?
I did two records with Marvin Pontiac.
Oh, two records. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, actually, the second one seems to have gone by the boards without people being aware of it. The Asylum one, which I did in 2017, which I'm quite proud of. And I did it all myself, all me on guitar and harmonica and vocals. And I think it's really good, and nobody seems to know about it. So so you should play a cut from it. I feel like hollering. Hey, I feel like hollering. I feel like hollering. Hey, I feel like hollering. How it started being Marvin Pontiac was, I had all this music, like, from the not quite for the right for the lounges, it was a right for a film score, and it needed vocals, and I had sort of accumulated all this music over the years, and then I added the vocals, but at the beginning, I really couldn't sing, and it was kind of embarrassing, so I had to create a character. So I created the Marvin Pontiac character so I'd have a mask to sing behind, so it would kind of free me up a little bit, give me a little bit more confidence, and, you know, to give it a character, because John Lurie sings, I just couldn't do that. So that's how Marvin Pontiac, that's how it got started. And then it was really, but then I started getting quotes from, you know, I got one from Flea, who's my good friend, and from Angelique Kijo, who's on the record, and then, so I got one from Iggy Pop. Yeah. But the best thing that was happened was that Bob Dylan said he didn't give quotes. And I needed somebody from that kind of demographic, you know, to say Marvin Pontiac was a big influence on me or something. Huh. And I remembered that Barb, my travel agent, was Leonard Cohen's travel agent. Barb, do you mind giving me Leonard Cohen's phone number? And she said, I'm not comfortable with that. And I said, that's fine. I wouldn't want you to get out my phone number, so I appreciate that. An hour later, Barb, the travel agent, calls me and says, okay, here's the number. And I dial the number, and the voice on the other end goes, "Hello?" and my mind takes a moment to kind of realize, "You've just called Leonard Cohen, you idiot." And I'm not prepared to talk to Leonard Cohen. I didn't have my spiel ready, you know? And then he goes, "Hello?" And then I did what you're doing. I started to laugh. So then I had to hang up on Leonard Cohen, which I, you know, and I waited like 3 days before I called him back and explained what I wanted. "Hello?"
And you were able, that the 3 days later, you were able to talk to him without laughing, eh?
Yeah, well, I didn't fess up to, I didn't, yeah.
I see. Well, yeah, that's a great story. Yeah. John Lurie, thank you so much for joining us today. Congratulations on The History of Bones, Painting with John, all of the great music that the Lounge Lizards produced, and all of your other great accomplishments, including being the Greg Popovich of music, which allows Greg Popovich to be the John Lurie of basketball. Think about that one. Okay. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, man, and thanks for reading the book.
That was John Lurie. He's a founding member of the legendary Lounge Lizards and the author of the memoir, The History of Bones. Find out much more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, T.C. Boyle, Joy Harjo, and John Lurie. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, Beta is now available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @wprbeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Now, I know you got into some trouble before you came here, but since then you've become one of the top people I've got working in this program.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Now don't take it personally if he doesn't like you right away. He will.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I would just like to thank you for this opportunity, and I hope that I can be of some real benefit to the program.